This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. This is Don Nolan. Steve is on a well-earned extended vacation, and we'll be back in about 2 weeks. We are here today to talk about the topic of vegetarianism, the ethical and biological and social and political issues associated with vegetarianism, particularly here at the University of Illinois Campus Vegetarian Society. And we have with us two guests, Michelle Hayden, who is with the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Is that right? Is that the name of the church?
Okay. Yes.
And she is particularly interested in promoting healthy food, and will tell us a little bit more about that. And also, we have Peter Conlon, who is president of the Campus Vegetarian Society. Michelle and Peter, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Appreciate your coming. Wanted to point out that this is a call-in show. If you would like to call in to present a question or post a comment about the topic today, you can call our local number, 333-9455. If you prefer an 800 number, it's 1-800-222-9455. All right. Well, we're going to be discussing various issues related to vegetarianism, and in particular, the Campus Vegetarian Society and a few other related activities associated with it. So why don't we just start the program off with Ms. Hayden. You want to tell us a little bit about how you got involved with vegetarianism in general and the Campus Vegetarian Society in particular? How long have you been interested in this topic?
I would say I've been interested in this topic for 25 years now that I became vegetarian. And I read in Genesis 1:29, says, "I give you every seed bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it, they will be yours for food. To this diet of grains, fruits, and nuts, God later added vegetables," also in Genesis 3:18.
So you have a biblical root for this.
Right. So when God made the man, he told them what to eat. And if we are getting ready for heaven, we have to teach our bodies and put healthy food in our bodies.
Now, you're involved with promoting healthy food through your church and through the Campus Vegetarian Society, is that right?
We have lots of foreign students that come to our church. Yes, our church gives vegetarian food fair. Since we have lots of students who are from foreign countries, we call it Vegetarian International Vegetarian Food Fair.
And that's so coming up.
That's coming up in October 12 on Sunday from 1 to 3:30. And fee is only $4. Children 10 and under are free. And students are free with ID, student ID. And it will be in Civic Center, October 12, Sunday.
The Urbana Civic Center.
Urbana Civic Center,
can
yes.
Can you name where that is?
That is in 108 Water Street in Urbana.
Right.
We will have sign, lighted sign in front of the center.
And Peter, how did you get interested in vegetarianism and the Campus Vegetarian Society? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Correct, yeah. I became vegetarian nearly 5 years ago. Basically, as soon as I was able to purchase food for myself and make my own food choices, I became vegetarian. My parents were against this, but it happened, and it's been since high school. I became involved in the Campus Vegetarian Society here at the university my sophomore year, so 3 years ago, and I've since became vegan as well. And what we do at the Campus Vegetarian Society is we have weekly potlucks every Wednesday at 8 p.m. at the University YMCA. These serve basically just to make vegetarianism accessible to the community and to the students here. And recently, just this past Thursday, we began a vegan cooking class, which is being taught at the basement of the Channing Murray, the Red Herring, which is a vegan restaurant on campus. And we have four people teaching that, one of which is the head chef of that restaurant.
Mm-hmm. So you are president, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And how many people are involved?
We have over 700 people on the listserv, which mm-hmm. all the people that receive emails from me weekly. At a typical potluck, we usually have 40 to 50 people show up. Mm-hmm. So all those people are fed very well. And we have different themes at each potluck. And we try to discuss topics related to vegetarianism as well at these potlucks. So people who are interested can become educated and just have all
now,
the food for them.
Not everybody knows what veganism is. My understanding is that there are four different kinds of vegetarian, lacto-ovo, veganism. What are the distinctions here?
Well, I know that Ms. Hayden would like to talk about vegetarianism. Where veganism is distinct from vegetarianism is with veganism, it excludes all animal products from the mm-hmm. diet, and typically it also excludes the use of any animal products in daily life, such as leather or tallowate, which is found in soaps. Mm-hmm. So we try to avoid any animal products, so no eggs,
no dairy,
no cheese, no fish.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so veganism
the basic
is as strict as you get.
Yeah, it's probably the strictest form of vegetarianism, but that's not to say that it's any more difficult than, you know, actually being vegetarian.
You agree with the description he just gave?
Yes. They are totally plant food diet.
Uh-huh.
Yes, they don't eat any flesh food or eggs or dairy product. As for use of leather, I did not know that.
Right, yeah. It's
Vegans will not use leather.
Most people sometimes, it depends on their motivations for being vegan. If mm-hmm. they're vegan for issues of animal rights,
mm-hmm.
most would avoid any leather products or any animal byproducts.
Mm-hmm.
So it extends into all product usage, not just food products.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are several world religions that come close to veganism, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I couldn't name all of them.
Jainism, I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Hinduism, and to some extent Buddhism.
Yeah, right? I believe Jainism is as close to veganism as you can get. Nearly all members of that religion or that mm-hmm. faith are.
And how much is veganism or vegetarianism a part of Seventh-day Adventist theology and tradition? Michelle?
We believe that vegetarianism is not strictly vegetarian, vegan vegetarian, but we believe that vegetarianism is you stay away from the flesh food diets.
Mm-hmm.
But we do use, the majority vegetarians use eggs and dairy product.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
so it's not veganism.
It's not vegan. Mm-hmm. There are three types, as the lacto-vego, which large group because of eating grains, fruit, vegetable, nuts, seeds, as well as eggs and dairy product. They reflect flesh food. They reject flesh food, such as beef, chicken, pork, fish, or other. Lacto-vegetarian who does not include eggs, but they include dairy product.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have total vegetarian or vegan. They easily only eat plant foods, no dairy, no eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to stay away from flesh food, mm-hmm. but we do use eggs, cheese, and dairy product.
Now, there are passages in the Bible that seem to at least condone eating meat. Isn't that right?
In Leviticus 11 gives you guideline of what kind of meat you can eat mm-hmm. is clean and what kind of meat you have to avoid. It talks about birds, talks about fish, shellfish, talks about animals. And we try to go by that guideline.
Mm-hmm.
So we remember that when God made Adam and Eve, he told them exactly what to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to copy that in our lives because we're preparing to go to heaven. And it's easier to get used to that kind of diet here.
Mm-hmm. So your motivations are as much theological, religious, as
right.
they are healthful. Biological or healthful. You don't see them as distinct.
Also.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Peter, do you have any religious motivations for your commitment to veganism?
Is it primarily
moral or otherwise?
My primary motivations for becoming vegan were mostly political and animal rights. Since becoming vegetarian and vegan, I've only had these beliefs reaffirmed and had more information to support my beliefs. Like mm-hmm. there are many implications in the vegetarian diet, environmental, political, health reasons as well. But I mean, as far as the Campus Vegetarian Society goes, there are people from all different religious backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, political backgrounds, and some people that come to our meetings are not even vegetarian. They're just people that are interested in maybe the vegetarian cuisine, maybe just in mm-hmm. becoming vegetarian themselves. So we don't make any distinctions as to, you know, mm-hmm. any motivations behind it, just anyone who's interested.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, my motivations were different, and I since have become more convinced.
Mm-hmm. What are your primary reasons that has reinforced your belief in veganism? Are they political, social, biological?
Oh, okay.
What?
Well, when I first became vegetarian, it was kind of to reflect my stance against animal cruelty, factory farming. Since then, I have realized all of the health implications, like combat high cholesterol, combat heart disease, combat obesity. All of those are benefits of the vegetarian diet, and also has environmental implications.
Heart issues.
Yeah, heart issues are huge.
Cancer.
Yeah, like 40% mm-hmm. Less of a cancer rate or incidence of cancer mm-hmm. in vegetarian diet. And then I guess the environmental issues are quite large. And most environmental groups, like the Sierra Club, are now focusing on teaching their members how large of an impact adopting a vegetarian diet can have on topics that are important to them as well, such as mm-hmm. Global warming, land degradation, and sustainable agriculture.
Raising meat and the cost of bringing meat to the table compared to growing vegetables and the cost of bringing them
right.
to the table, do you have any figures on comparison?
I believe the current figures are it takes about 16 pounds of grains or soy products or anything to bring to the table 1 pound of meat, and it takes about 20 times the amount of land to grow all of the food and raise the animals
mm-hmm.
to sustain a meat-based diet rather than one that's based solely on plant foods.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, you can see easily how 80% of the agricultural land usage in the United States and Latin America is for the production of meat, and that's including, of course, all of the grains that are cultivated for animal feed.
Now, if let's just say one of the questions I think I'm going to focus on, if you don't mind, is sometimes called the universalization principle. If we universalize the prohibition of eating meat, that's going to mean an exponential use of land for growing more vegetables, right? Have vegans thought that through in terms of the impact on the environment?
Right, yeah. the idea is that if it were universalized, which is kind of a stretch,
not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think anyone expects. Well, maybe some people hope that eating meat would be abolished, but even if we lessened the amount of meat that we ate, the difference is 20 times the amount of land would be available for the growth of actual plant foods that people would consume.
Mm-hmm.
So this would functionally eliminate all of this going into Latin America and the Amazon, which is one thing that some popular vegetarian websites are focusing on right now is something like 70% of the Amazon has been cut flat and now is used for chicken feed, growing soy products. This would hopefully be stopped.
Livestock.
Yeah.
Right. Before we go any further, let me just remind our listening audience, this is a call-in show, and you're welcome to call in any questions or comments that you'd like to address to our guests today, who are Michelle Hayden, who is with the Seventh-day Adventist Church and is interested in promoting healthy living and advertising our upcoming food fair on October 12th at the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
No, at the Civic Center.
Oh, at the Civic Center. I'm sorry, you said earlier. In Urbana, the Urbana Civic Center. And we also have Peter Conlon, who is president of the Campus Vegetarian Society. If you'd like to call in to ask any questions or make comments about our topic, which is vegetarianism today, you can call 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Well, Michelle, let's turn it to the question, do you think that God, in your religious tradition, sees animals as creatures as having rights, or are there other reasons besides that issue for avoiding eating meat and manufacturing it for consumption?
Before sin entered into the world, we were guided to eat the vegetable, fruits, nuts, and plant trees that produce fruit with seed.
Mm-hmm.
After the sin, then animals were made possible to be eaten, like in Noah's day, when God ordered him to bring two of each unclean and seven pair of each clean animals into the ark. And that with birds and all sorts of animals that came into the ark, there was lack of food.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no vegetation because at that time. So God loves us so much, he cares what we should do. Then he gave us guideline how to eat and what to eat of these animals.
We're talking about pre-flood era Garden of Eden?
It was pre-flood was all vegetables and fruits, nuts, legumes.
Gotcha.
But after the sin, after the flood, well, then we had right to eat the flesh food.
We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question or a comment?
Yes, I was just curious if I could ask a question about the vegan philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the practical limitations, like how about vermin control and stuff for buildings, or like overpopulation of deer, and like should we eat venison or let them overpopulate? I don't know, just practical limitations.
Well, thank you for your question. Peter?
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, that's something that is often asked about the vegan philosophy is like animal control. I would like to talk about the deer thing really shortly because population control is important, but there's not really a overwhelming amount of evidence that prove that keeping the deer population at the levels which we do now is the best way of controlling this population. Usually populations follow a normal dynamic where the population explodes and then they reach capacity and then they decline naturally. And what we've been doing is killing them before they're able to reach this capacity. And so they just keep increasing. It's like we build upon each level. And I don't know very much about this. Vermin control, I personally and, you know, other people that are vegan, we don't spray for bugs or kill animals ourselves. If they're, you know, if we have an infestation in the house, usually we'll try to do more humane methods of, you know, capturing animals in cages that are not dangerous and then re-releasing them.
So your veganism isn't just dietary, it's also
right,
a way of
yeah.
life.
It's a way of life, it's a way of thinking, it's just, it's a way of reflecting our philosophy
right.
by actions, I guess.
We also have a caller on line two. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Your question or comment?
Yeah, hello. I would like to point out that recently the United Nations came out in favor of vegetarianism and pointed out that the production of meat contributes greatly to global warming. There is the fact that you can feed many more people on a field of grain than you can on the same field if it goes, you know, through a cow. And there's the methane gas that the animals produce. There's the, all the transportation, trucking the meat around, and so on. And I guess storage. I don't know exactly all the details, but I thought that was very interesting. And I'm sort of quasi-vegetarian. I do still eat chicken and fish, maybe an average of about once a week, maybe twice, and then not that much. Use it more as a condiment. And the thing is, if everyone would limit their meat intake to once or twice a week or less, then there'd be enough for everybody to go around. So I think there are lots of reasons to be vegetarian or semi-vegetarian or aim in that direction, that it's better for the planet and it's better for humankind. And also it's probably better for health.
Well, thank you very much for your comment. Michelle, you want to respond?
Yes. We are to choose what we put in our body. If you decide to eat once or twice a week chicken, and do you remove all the fat from it? Do you really cook it on the top of stove or bake it? It makes difference how you cook your chicken and how you eat your chicken, because any animal flesh that has fat in it, it causes your cholesterol to rise and gives you hypertension and other diseases that are related to cholesterol, to heart attack, stroke, liver disease, hypertension, and stress. We are the architects of our body. What we put in our body, we have to choose very delicately.
Mm-hmm. Colin, do you have another question?
No, I just was staying on because I thought she had a question.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Well, we, yes, Peter, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I would just like to thank the caller for mentioning that. That's been very encouraging among the vegetarian community. I think that was a 2006 report by the UN. In support of vegetarianism, and also the American Dietetic Association has released several statements supporting the vegetarian diet and lifestyle as well, saying that vegetarianism is healthful, and it is sufficient and, you know, very, very much an appropriate diet choice for any stage of life, and that includes during pregnancy, during infancy, childhood, and all the way through adulthood. So those two reports, seeing mainstream support for such a choice is quite nice.
If someone wanted to look that up, can you give any advice on how to find UN report or those reports?
I don't know exactly how to find the documents from the UN report. You could surely go on the UN website, but if you go on such websites, vegetarian websites such as Vegan Outreach, GoVeg.com, or Vegetarian Resource Group, which is VRG.org, all of those websites have information about vegetarian nutrition, information about environmental impact, information about animal rights, and pretty much anything that you would like to find out about. And any of the figures that I'm quoting are most likely on those websites as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, can we get back to the question I raised with you, Michelle, earlier? And Peter, feel free to jump in here. I assume you are acquainted with the so-called animal liberation movement.
Yeah, that's correct.
Peter Singer is a famous early advocate of this with a book by that name, Animal Liberation. He gives several reasons why animals have a right not to suffer, to be systematically farmed, and so on.
Right.
Isn't there an issue here with traditional Christian theology, because the animals are not really considered to have rights? Is that fair? Or how do you view that, Michelle, within the Seventh-day Adventist tradition?
Well, we do recognize that animals have rights, because, let's face it, when God made the animals, he had Adam to name them. Mm-hmm. He did not name them sausage and beef and pork, you know. He named them animals. Adam named them name by name. You know, all the animals were, God respected that. God brought them before Adam to choose a mate for himself, but he did not. Rather, he named them. Mm-hmm. And we see the respect there for the animals.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is the, suppose someone said to you, no, God has put animals under the dominion of humankind.
He has.
And what does that mean, to be under that dominion?
In other words, man will rule over animals. Not to kill them, eat them.
Mm-hmm.
But he will take care of them and not be afraid of them.
Mm-hmm. Do animals have a right not to be killed?
Well,
within your theological tradition,
there is a scriptural reference that says, if you can kill an animal, then you can eat that meat.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have the heart to kill it, don't eat it.
Well, it doesn't seem to be much of a problem up at the stockyards in Chicago.
I know.
Unfortunately,
that's so sad, though.
Sorry?
I say that's so sad.
Well, we certainly have chicken and our poultry factories right here in Champaign County and lots of other places. So apparently there are people who don't have that problem. So there must be a little bit more of a rationale there for why that's an issue from a moral point of view. Peter Singer develops this, right?
Yeah. Well, also, I don't know if this was Peter Singer, but Vegan Outreach, which Peter Singer is very much involved with, has in many of their promotional videos of vegetarianism a statement that says no one should have to kill to make a dollar, to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's included that people that work at these stockyards shouldn't have to do so, just, you know, for capital. Also, this is something else, since you brought up Peter Singer. He's also said that many people, when he talks to them about vegetarianism, say that human problems come first. Mm-hmm. And he's for one urged people to realize that in stopping consumption of meat, it also is a human problem as well. This mm-hmm. is the political implications of vegetarian diet. It stops all of this, the extension of this farmland moving out Native peoples and eliminating these small businesses that are, you know, small farms are just eliminated, make way for more animal feed.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought I'd bring that up since we were talking about.
Right, but I can't remember exactly where Peter Singer draws the line. Presumably, he would not say that a roach has rights, right?
Well, I guess since roaches are not so much exploited as farm animals are, I don't think that he's had to address such a thing, at least not in anything I've ever read.
Mm-hmm.
What many of these groups are trying to eliminate is the factory farming of animals.
Right.
And this extends especially, many people say, well, fish, they can't feel pain. And it's been proven since that statement has been around for such a long time that fish actually do feel pain. They experience suffering. And these movements...
All fish, some fish?
That's correct, all fish.
All fish?
Yes.
Even the most primitive fish.
Right, and even such animals as slugs are capable of very complex decision making. They mm-hmm. have the same neural networks, the mm-hmm. hypothalamus. Even a primitive hypothalamus is enough to feel suffering and respond to suffering. So these they're not only factory farms for land animals. There are now factory farms. Mankind is so clever that we found a way to factory farm in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
We have open ocean corrals of farms of fish that are packed so tightly. It increases disease so that 40% of the fish are never even caught before they're killed.
Right.
It has ecological implications.
It's
destroying the ocean, the
Maybe
land.
We'll come back to this.
Yeah.
We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question or comment? Hello? Line one, are you there? Okay, I think we may have lost it. Let's try line two. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a comment or question.
Hi, how are you?
Yes.
I heard a woman, I don't know if she's a guest on the show or if she was a caller, that was talking about the Bible. That's something I know very little about. But
Our guest is Michelle Hayden from
the
Seventh-day Adventist Church. Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. And she was saying, I think that she was using the Bible to say that God didn't say that here's a cow, here's sausage, or here's whatever she was saying. But isn't there, like in Deuteronomy, doesn't it tell you what parts to eat or not to eat of the fish and of the meat and what not to eat?
I think she was going into that just a little bit, but Michelle, you want to respond to that?
Yes.
And I'll get off the air.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Yes, it talks in Leviticus 11. It talks about clean animals that park the hoof and chew the cud. They are clean to be eaten. And it gives you example, like cow. And it tells you about the animals that chew the cud but do not have split hoof, like camel, or have split hoof and do not chew the cud, as swine. Like pig. These are unclean. And so it talks about fish, it talks about birds, it talks about all clean and unclean. Yes, Bible does talk about this, and it's very, very clear about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. We have another caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question or comment?
Yes, I just wanted to take note of a couple of things that I think are very interesting in this regard. The Jains and other karmic traditions that believe in the law of karma typically will include, of course, animals and human beings and other sentient creatures, Buddhists, of course, as well, in the law of karma and rebirth and since we're all within the realm of suffering, and we have desires, we unfortunately kill each other, and we, of course, kill animals in the process and so forth. And typically, of course, in Buddhist traditions, the killing of sentient creatures directly in particular is a major problem. Jains, by the way, I think you have a real, vegans in particular, have great allies because the Jains, this is J-A-I-N-S, a very famous early tradition, older than the Buddhists, several million Jains in India even now. And, of course, for them, the killing of any sentient being, including microscopic, very, very small creatures, is problematic. And so they typically will wear a gauze over their mouths and carry a kind of brush to clean off the ground in front of them so they don't kill any living creatures. Their notion is, of course, that if you kill any living being, that this, of course, accrues karma. You know, their idea is essentially that you try to increasingly or decrease exponentially one's killing of living beings. That's really the centerpiece of the entire tradition. So I just want to call attention to that. And also that in larger terms, these karmic traditions really place human beings within the sort of this environmental sphere that I think the vegans are pointing toward, and which films like Fast Food Nation, for example, are calling our attention to, that there is this farming of animals and very, very cruel treatment of animals, that even if one promotes the eating of meat to some extent, one should at least attempt to eat chickens that are allowed to run free and are not farmed in this way, or cows for that matter. One other thing I just was curious about, mammals, I think, would be a useful part of your argument, that if you're going to kill mammals in particular, cows and so forth, which are extremely intelligent, they can feel pain. Obviously, fish can also feel pain and so forth, but mammals in particular, I think, might be one help to your argument in convincing people that the treatment of mammals, the difference between a cow and a dog, how different is that actually, you know, in real terms? So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in.
Well, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. We were sort of getting to that topic, Peter, earlier when I was asking about where Peter Singer would draw the line. Right. Obviously, the Jains would draw the line pretty radically low on the scale because they believe all living creatures have souls.
Right.
And any time you cause suffering to a soul, you maximize bad karma. But you don't go that far, right?
Well, I mean, I definitely would go almost just as far as to say not to harm any living creature. The philosophy behind the Jain and Buddhist vegetarianism is, in simple terms, to reduce the suffering of the earth. So reduce suffering of any living being. And I'd like to thank the caller for pointing that out. Not only mammals are, you know, as far as intelligent beings go, some people would be very surprised to find out that squid and octopi have often scored much higher than dogs and cats on intelligence tests. So you can see that it's not, you know, it's definitely harming a mammal, but it can be also harming such a creature that we would typically think of as lower level animals. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that these karmic traditions have very good points to make about such things, and people should definitely pay attention to them, like the caller has pointed out.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Well, let's talk a little bit about the food fair. What's going to go on October 12th at the food fair at the Urbana Civic Center, Michelle?
We have a set up from different countries in the world that students have come, and they make vegetarian dish. Mm-hmm. And we are serving the food for tasting. But people come and sit, and they enjoy themselves testing vegetarian food. And many people show interest in taking cooking classes also, vegetarian cooking classes, mm-hmm. that follows upon the interest that we find signed in the on the cards.
So if you're hungry for vegetarian food and you want to know how to cook it, come to the Urbana Civic Center on October 12th.
Right.
To the food fair, right?
We have varieties, I mean, from different parts of the country, world.
That should be delightful. We have another caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Oops, we lost him. Sorry about that. Peter, you mentioned that you are involved in a vegan restaurant, the Red Herring, on campus. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So the Red Herring is a vegan restaurant located at 1209 West Oregon Street. It's actually the only vegan restaurant in the state south of Chicago. It's all vegan. It's an amazing place. I know the head chef there quite well. His name's Chad Knowles, and he and I, along with two other members of the Campus Vegetarian Society, Anthony Lavenda and Stephanie Spees, have just started a vegan cooking class just to extend this arm out to the community and say, like, we're trying to make vegetarianism and veganism more accessible, mm-hmm. which is our goal. So we started this vegan cooking class this past Thursday. We had about 25 people come out, and I expect quite a few more for the next one. They're meeting almost every Thursday. We had to take out a few dates, but if anyone would be interested in such a thing, they could email me. It's it's peterlconlin@gmail.com. So it's peterlconlin@gmail, and they can email me if they're interested in taking the cooking class or if they would like to be added to the listserv for our vegetarian potlucks every Wednesday.
Now, speaking of cooking, one of the concerns a lot of folks have who aren't terribly literate about vegetarianism and the nutritional aspects of it are concerned about the protein, the lack of protein. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? And
sure.
There are some other issues as well regarding nutrition. Michelle?
We have, you can get protein from nuts, seeds, and legumes. Plenty protein that...
What about combinations and eating with certain foods?
Well, I have made some vegetarian food for you to test it. Mm-hmm. It has vegetable, has protein. I put lentils in it. It's high in protein and iron. And also has rice fiber and variety of mixed vegetables. Mm-hmm. And you can mix them together and fix them together. Like, for instance, you get a bowl full of oatmeal. Put in it a tablespoon of flaxseed. Mm-hmm. meal and put
flax seed
mm-hmm. and also walnut and a fruit, banana or blueberries. You get excellent breakfast with omega-3 and no animal fat, but high in omega-3
mm-hmm.
and protein, because walnuts and flaxseed, they produce
mm-hmm.
big protein for
right,
you.
Right.
And you mix it with for healthy breakfast.
Now, isn't it the case, educate me on this, isn't it the case that eating certain meats are a more efficient way in terms of volume and quickness of digestion to get protein, so you have to be more careful in how you combine what you just mentioned? Or is that unfair to say? You have to make sure that you eat enough in order to get that protein requirement.
When you have a cup of cooked beans, you're getting more than you required that mm-hmm. you get from the fat.
Your full daily requirement.
Yes.
I could chime in for a second. So basically, the protein requirement, the recommended daily allowance, which is basically the amount of protein that you would need to be a healthy individual,
mm-hmm.
is it's 0.36 grams of protein for every pound of body weight that you have. For vegetarians, it's often been modified since plant proteins are digested differently than animal proteins, that you require 0.45 grams of protein for every pound of your body weight.
Mm-hmm.
So this factor, this becomes about 10% of your caloric intake that anyone should be getting as part of their diet, a daily diet. So vegetarians and vegans typically are getting between 10 and 12% protein, whereas non-vegetarians are getting 14 to 18%.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that, you know, the protein requirement is actually right at the level that typical vegetarians are getting. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about the combinations of foods, that was often given a lot of, there was a big focus on that because different plant foods have a different combination of the 9 essential amino acids,
mm-hmm.
which the human body can't synthesize, so we have to get them in our diet. But they're all present in plant foods, mm-hmm. only in different concentrations. So it used to be people, dietitians would say, well, it's important that you combine this food with this food in this certain way, and then each day you'll be healthy and you'll get all the essential mm-hmm. amino acids. Since then, it's been found out that it's much easier to do this
mm-hmm.
as long as you eat a balanced diet that contains, you know, plants, whole grains, nuts, legumes.
But that balanced diet, it is a balanced more important diet, than with eating meat? Or
no, what? A balanced diet is essential way, right? For, you know, anything, and that's why it's not more difficult to get protein on a vegetarian or even a vegan diet. It's just important to eat mm-hmm. healthily, which is important for anyone.
For whatever diet. Now, we just have a few minutes left here. One last call. If you're interested in posting a question to one of our guests or a comment, you can call 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Now, Michelle, you were wanting to chime in here on Peter's
yes,
dietary
you
advice.
You also get lots of fiber from eating vegetables and mm-hmm. fruits, which in flesh food you don't get that.
And isn't there an argument that there are other negative side effects to eating meat, particularly in how it is stored in the gut? And what are the downsides of eating meat?
Well, when you eat meat, you're actually getting yourself high on cholesterol, which mm-hmm. causes heart attack and stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And your blood pressure goes up, and you become obese. And it has lots of fat in it.
Mass-produced factory meat, right? What about right. folks who make sure that they eat organic meat, organically grown?
It still has fat in it.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot take the fat in from inside the meat.
Mm-hmm.
And Bible, again, strictly says don't eat fat.
Right. By the way, we do have a question that was called in. Let me ask this, and either Peter or Michelle, feel free to respond. Question is, seeing as veganism is about being careful or respectful about what one puts in one's body, what considerations are given to medications? Do you all address that?
Yeah, certainly. I think possibly what the question is asking, and I'm not certain if I understand it correctly, but
in addition here, or other non-food uses with, not sure that I understand the rest of it, but what
okay,
about
well, as far as medical research goes, I would assume that most vegans, as myself included, would take the stance that doing research on animals is also unethical. It should be avoided at all costs. And when I say that, I do believe that it can be avoided easily under any circumstances. Animal testing is, after the animal testing have been done, it always goes back to testing on humans or testing it in a modeled computer simulation. So, it hasn't been done convincingly that these are necessary. And some vegans would go as far as to avoid products that they have knowledge that have been tested on animals. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you knew that a certain cosmetic, some sort of cosmetic application was tested on animals, then they would avoid doing, you know, using such a product. Right. It's being selective in where you put your money, where you invest your money in, so that you avoid supporting such a practice.
Right. We have a call on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yeah, I may have missed when you mentioned when you meet the campus vegetarian group.
We meet every Wednesday at 8 p.m. at the University YMCA, which is on Wright Street.
Now, is this just a meeting, or do you eat?
No, it's a potluck. Everyone brings a vegetarian or vegan dish.
Uh-huh.
And we typically have 40 to 50 people show up, and everyone just sits down and eats and each other and discuss and just have a good time.
Uh-huh. And so it's at 8 o'clock on Wednesday?
That's right, every week.
And where?
At the University YMCA. The YMCA is on.
Well, I know where that is, okay. But I just wondered what room it was in.
Oh, it's in the main hall.
Okay.
Like immediately when you enter the doors.
Sure.
Yep.
Another thing too is you mentioned October 12th there was going to be some event, but I didn't catch what time.
Michelle?
From 1 till 3:30 in the afternoon.
1 to 3:30.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Incidentally, I didn't hear anybody talk about soy.
Or maybe
I missed that.
Well, since you brought it up, either soy or other, I guess you would call them meat substitute products, such as seitan or tempeh, are also incredibly high in protein.
Right.
So, for example, if you're worried about protein, 3 ounces of seitan, which is basically cooked wheat gluten, which is the protein component of wheat, purified down and then cooked with water and flavored. It has 33.1 grams of protein for every 3 ounces that you take.
Right.
Which is incredibly high.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
All right. I hope to see you at the potlucks.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for your call and your questions. We have another caller in line two. Hello. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for the show this afternoon. I sure appreciate it.
Go ahead.
I wanted to suggest that one of the things we haven't really talked about today, and one of the things that I think the industrial agricultural people work incredibly hard to keep from our view, is the types of suffering that animals go through in order to end up as food on our plates. And it's really quite uncomfortable, and it's really quite grotesque, the lives that animals live, chickens, pigs, cows, that are going to end up being our dinners. And I know it's in some ways it's so grotesque that it's difficult to talk about on the radio, but Steve, I would encourage you to think about having a show that explores the lives of industrial farm animals and the way in which they're killed and processed, because I think it's so shocking, and so few of us know anything at all about the conditions that the animals live in, or how they get reproduced, for instance, that it might be difficult for people to hear, but I think it would be enlightening.
Very good question. So few of us know, and my experience on discussing this topic, so few wish to know once they scratch the surface. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would have a hard time covering all the suffering that goes on at factory farms in the remaining 6 minutes that we have. But I would like to recommend one of many very moving documentaries. It's called Earthlings. It's just a documentary on animal suffering and animal exploitation in general. It covers factory farms. It covers the leather industry. It covers just a variety, 5 different topics, which are all ways that humans exploit animals. And I agree. Many people find it very hard to talk about the types of suffering that go on. I feel that people should know, and I have quite a few friends that after watching even just the documentary that I just mentioned, Earthlings, they themselves became vegetarian after seeing like the horrors that are present in the implications of the meat that we eat on our plates.
Michelle, do you want to add to that?
No, I agree totally. I agree with him. Yes, it's very important to watch that, to read that.
How can you get a hold of that?
Actually, the documentary is free online. I watched it through Google Video. So all I did is type in Earthlings. It's narrated by Joaquin Phoenix. It's for free on the entire movie. It's about probably about an hour and a half.
It's not that old, is it?
No, it's quite a recent movie, and I'd recommend that documentary to anyone interested in seeing some
Earthlings.
Of the things. Earthlings, right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question. I think we have a caller on line two. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question? Hello? Line two. Are you there? All right. Well, thank you very much. We just have about two more minutes. There was a recent report from Oxford scientists who used memory tests and physical checks and brain scans to evaluate with brain scans people between the ages of 61 and 87, and they seem to think that there is a significant decline in B12, particularly on the part of vegans. Can you talk a little bit about how you deal with that issue? The report recently came out about brain shrinkage, which is pretty frightening to most people. You want to address that?
Yeah,
since
that's
it's
absolutely
in the news.
True. So vitamin B12 is
just about 15 seconds.
Yeah, I'll
15
do it really
seconds.
Quickly. Vitamin B12 is an essential vitamin that is not present in plant-based foods. It's synthesized by bacteria and funguses, and it's found in meats and animal-based foods. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, as you would expect, some vegetarians are deficient in this. So what you want to do to be sure that you're getting appropriate amounts of vitamin B12 mm-hmm. is eat vitamin-fortified foods. Most soy milks and cereals are fortified, and also nutritional yeast is very high in vitamin B12.
We're all out of time. Sorry, I wish we could go on. Quite interesting program. We've had with us Michelle Hayden from Seventh-day Adventist Church and Peter Conlon, president of the Campus Vegetarian Society, talking about vegetarianism. Thank you very much, Michelle and Peter, for being with us.
Thank you.
This is Don Nolan, Keeping the Faith. See you again next week.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Jill Bolte-Taylor is a Harvard-trained brain scientist who suffered a crippling stroke. What's remarkable about her story is that she watched in clinical detail what was happening to her own mind and body while she was having it. I'm Jim Fleming. We'll talk with Jill Bolte-Taylor about her experience next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7.
The University of Illinois has long been a leader when it comes to providing athletic opportunities for those with disabilities.
Imagine if we can get society to look at all people on the merits of their character, their principles, their values, and their skills, and not on the negative things.
Tune in September 27th at 6 p.m. on AM 580 for Competing Against Discrimination, Achieving Equality in Athletics at the University of Illinois.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Spurlock Museum Guild, holding its annual dinner and auction on Saturday, October 4th at 6 p.m. at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center on the U of I campus. Proceeds help sponsor educational programs at the Spurlock Museum. More information and tickets on the web at spurlock.illinois.edu.
This is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.